Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the IT Babble Podcast, episode 195. Tony, we had our first snow here in Indianapolis. Our first snow of for winter. Yeah. Big fluffy flakes came down this morning. It's been kind of like snowing, sleeting a little bit, but then this morning it was like full on snow for a couple of hours. You know, so.
Well, I've been telling people for the last 6 months that we're heading into a 20 plus year cycle of a solar minimum, and nobody believes me. So now, Patrick, maybe people will. Because of you.
I hope so. I love to help. I love to bring people awareness.
Solar minimum, people. Pay attention.
That's a new one. I gotta figure it out.
I follow this dude's newsletter who's like a expert on electromagnetism.
Yep.
Just something I don't understand very well. And he has really good charts and graphs. And he's always talking about the solar minimum and stuff. He always reports the amount of snowfall everywhere and how much ice is going around and
solar minimum.
So yeah, I'm bought in. I'm bought in on the solar minimum. I don't know how to make money off of it, but if I could just bet on the solar minimum without trying to figure out which stocks would I need to invest in like separately, I would do it. So if anybody wants to put together a solar minimum index fund, I'm in.
We at IT Babble are curious, and I'm gonna have to look into solar minimum. Never heard of it until just now, so
yeah,
I'm gonna have to check it out. That's very
Let's
cool.
Let's do it. You've proved it, Patrick. I'm sold now.
I was
on the fence, but
snow.
How much snow did you get?
Very little. And in the afternoon, it started snowing. I think around 9 a.m. here, 8:30, 9 a.m. And it stopped around 11. Very little, maybe a quarter of an inch, or that because the ground is still fairly warm, and so it was hitting the ground and melting. But then it started to accumulate a little bit. But of course, by the evening, it had all melted. It's all gone. But maybe it's going to be a nice white Christmas here. You know, snow is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got a good show. We're going to be playing What Are You Drinking? Hardware as a Service. We've been pushing this off for two weeks now. So
it is boring. But I'm ready. I was going to take it off, but I've decided.
We're committed.
I'm going to see it through.
All right, hold on here. And Windows Surface SE, they announced it last week. I'm excited, but I've got questions, and I hope maybe you might have some insight since you have managed Windows devices before in a school environment. I've never managed Windows devices. But I'm interested in this. This is their Chromebook. When we have our Ask IT Babble as well. But first, I went to a conference last week, Tony. I went to a conference and here in Indianapolis. Called Uh-oh. The HECC conference.
The HECC?
HECC, H-E-C-C. Do you want to know what HECC stands for?
Tell me.
I'm looking it up. It stands for Hoosiers. For people who don't know Indiana, Hoosiers is kind of the mascot of the state, but nobody really knows what a Hoosier is. It's not it's just a person who lives in Indiana. So Hoosiers. Educational Computer Coordinators, HECC. But it's a really good conference. If you're in the Midwest, I'd say it's, you know, go check it out. It's downtown Indianapolis and good vendors that are there, but really good workshops and things for teachers, things for administrators. It's a real good mix. It's really good stuff. I definitely came away with some interesting ideas. So. We'll see how they go, but yeah, HECC conference. Check it out. I'll put a link. And if you want to, you can always join HECC too. It's just a listserv. Tony,
is the name of the listserv called What the HECC?
It's not. They don't do a whole lot of nameplay.
Come on,
Patrick. I wish they would. But
Did you learn anything, or were you guys just like really happy to just be at a conference?
No, I did. I learned something. I'm going to write a post about it maybe a few months down the road. I saw this neat little STEM kit, and what was cool about it was that it was very low cost. Usually these STEM kits are hundreds of dollars, right? Because you're building robots and stuff. And this one is you're building a vehicle kind of a thing. Okay. So, but it doesn't look like a car. It doesn't look pretty like a car. But the body is 3D printed. You're using a breadboard. You're using a micro bit, which is probably the most expensive part of the whole thing. You've got a motor. And then you have LED lights. And so like the kit, it's for like one of these things, it's like maybe $20 or something like that. But it's really cool. The guy's like, yeah, I can put all sorts of sensors on here. So I have this one, I have like a light shining underneath the car. And then I have this other sensor and I put a shield up. It's like attached to the gears. So depending on how fast it goes, it'll like have this shield that will block the sensor and then expose the sensor and block the sensor. And they can grab that data and then determine velocity, acceleration. And he goes, you can do all sorts of things like this. And it was good. It was low cost and it was very practical. And a lot of these things, they have a clear end. You know what I'm talking about? Like you go through the course and then that's it. It doesn't grow beyond that. This is really wide open. You could take this kit and probably start with middle school kids and use this same kit with like people who are in like AP physics or an IB physics or something like that. It can be that complex if you want it to be, which I think is pretty cool. Pretty cool. But I'll write more about that stuff. But that was probably the best thing I saw. I saw a lot of good things, but that was probably the best. Micro kits, I think is what they were called. I don't know. I'll have to check my notes. Anyway. Yeah. But hey, Tony, are you ready to play?
I am. Let's go.
That's what am I drinking? That was the wrong jingle. Go. What am I drinking? Okay, Tony, do you want to go?
It kind of worked with that initial bit, though. Patrick, you might want to revise it.
Just kind
like
of
a deep voice. Ask. Yeah, ask, what am I drinking?
What am I drinking?
There you go, Terry. Anyway, I might.
Okay, so I'm drinking I think I'm drinking a pretty common beer, Shiner Bock.
Yeah.
Yep, I buy it pretty frequently. And let me look something up really quick so I'm not completely wrong about everything, because if I'm not right about this solar minimum, this would make me 0 for 2. Let's see. Shiner Bock.
I think it's very common. I think it's out of Texas.
It is. It's actually a fairly lower calorie beer. It's only like 4% alcohol, but people think because it's a darker color, it's heavy, but it's not. Yeah. It's, I don't know. So I recommend it. It's not bitter. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. I think you can find that just about anywhere in the country too. I think Shiner Bock is pretty widely distributed. I think it's a pretty big label.
I'm a fan.
Nice.
Go ahead.
I'm drinking, S'mores Milk Stout from Left Hand Brewing Company. Left Hand's out of Colorado.
Man, like, I shouldn't even play this game. I'm just a pedestrian.
Milk Stout. Awesome.
And then here's my question. Did it come in one bottle, or do you have to mix it and then let it sit for a few days before you drink it?
No, it's like, all...
Have you gotten that extreme?
No. This is just one bottle. It's... For whatever reason, stouts are darker beers. For people who don't know, they're usually rich, maybe heavier, but sweeter. They have like a nice sweet taste to them, and my wife and I enjoy drinking them. And they seem to come out more in the wintertime. So there's a lot of new stouts out there, and yeah, we just thought we'd pick it up, and it was like in a 12 pack, and they had four different types of stouts. So they had this one. They had a double milk stout. They had one with like chili, like kind of like chili pepper. Not like the pepper you grow, but like chili pepper, the spice.
I had a beer last night a guy gave me. I can't remember what the name was, but it was like, it was a lager, but it was salt and lime.
Oh.
And it was actually pretty good.
Hmm. I could see that as it being a pretty good flavor. Oh.
It was not the classic Bud Light Lime, but I was like, dude, I hope he gave it to me, and I just all I could think about is like, how am I going to drink this if it is the same as Bud Light Lime? It's just that's just one of those tastes I can't like, and I know people that drink it, I just can't take it. I don't know what it is that the aftertaste of the lime is just like too much for me.
I don't think I've had it. I've had some other Budweiser like flavored beers, and I'm not a huge fan of them, but. If you like it out there, nothing wrong with it. You
just I think maybe we should change gears and just start doing a beer podcast. So it's just something to think about.
We you know, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Right. Let's move on.
Okay.
Hardware as a service.
Okay.
I'm so, ready.
Disclaimers.
I've got my...
What am I talking about?
I'm ready.
Okay. First off, Patrick, if you're doing anything at your school that I'm talking about... Don't say we are doing it because technically you have a contract with somebody and we shouldn't talk about our individual school contracts.
This is okay. This is true. This is true. Okay.
Okay. All right. So I'm just throwing that out because you might get excited. It might like, that's what I'm stop. You're insulting. Don't do that. Just like, just let it go. I have been researching these for a lot of different reasons. And actually the reason it's boring is because I've been researching the financial model. Because I realized, and I'll explain this in a minute, that schools in the U.S., not necessarily overseas, where a lot of schools aren't technically nonprofit or they're nonprofit, but they still have to pay taxes, schools in the U.S. are kind of at a disadvantage with their financial modeling if they're not really careful with some of these plans. And so I just kind of want to get into it. So first, what is hardware as a service? That means that in your school... maybe the network or the servers that you use are basically leased. So you don't buy them. You're not paying full price for them. You're leasing them. You're paying a fee every month. Maybe you're getting your Wi-Fi access points and your phones only. Maybe you're getting your Wi-Fi access points, your phones, and your firewall managed. There's so many different combinations.
Yeah. Copiers are very common.
Copiers, yeah, big one. Copiers and printers, hardware as a service. Yep. And so what you're doing is you're paying a fee, and what that fee gets you is first, it saves you on having to have like $200,000 from a massive renovation. So you get, and I would say $200,000 isn't even massive. I would say that's like one large building. Like some campuses, it would be way more than that. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to have a massive capital infusion to keep your technology up to date, and it's as a service. So on the other end of the contract, there are engineers and people who do the work for you. So you don't have to employ a full-time person, who would be very expensive to employ, and they might only have like 10 to 15 hours of work to do a week. Mm. But you have to keep them, you know, full-time on salary. So That's the model. It is a very common model. Companies, normal like for-profit companies, went to it a long time ago. And then schools over the last like decade or so have started. First, they started with copiers, and then they went copiers and printers. And they're like, oh, maybe our phones. And they've just kind of added. And now a lot of schools are just full hardware as a service. Like everything is basically outsourced. And their employees do tech support and, you know, work with teachers and do stuff that you would want to do at a school.
Yep.
Okay. So here's the problem I've found. Here's the main problem I've found. When you're doing these contracts, the contract eventually is going to come to an end. And when it comes to an end, you're probably in one of two situations. One, your lease is up and you're in three situations. So situation one is your lease is up and you just want to continue the lease. So you make another contract and you just keep going. Two, your lease is up. You're not happy with your provider and you want to switch, but you don't have a buyout clause on your hardware or three, your lease is up, you want to switch, and you have a buyout clause. So in situation number one, it's not a big deal as long as the lease price per month is the same, you just keep going. Mm-hmm. If there's a minor increase, you're probably going to take it. Okay, you're probably going to take a 2 to 3% bump. You're probably going to not be able to afford like a 7 to 10% bump, but normally the company would tell you well in advance. So if you're in situation number two, where your lease is up and you don't have a buyout clause, what that means is if you cancel the contract, they take all the hardware back.
Yeah.
They take it all. Now, if you're just going to roll right into another provider, you could, and it's the same amount of money, it's, again, not such a problem. There's going to be a lot of infrastructure exchange, though. I mean, this company is going to have to come in, and you're going to have to shut your campus down so they can they're going to rip out all your equipment, and they're going to put in new equipment. So you're looking at, like, one or two business weeks, like 5 to 10 days of massive interruptions and downtime. And then, you know, three, you have a buyout. So what that means is you've agreed that at the end you can pay like a flat fee and you get to keep all your equipment. And then you can find a company to manage it or you can employ somebody. What I've found is that a lot of these deals put schools in the number two position. Now, a for-profit company, they would have annually looked at their assets and looked at a variety of other factors, and they would have put money aside. They would have depreciated equipment to offset their taxes, and they would have put money aside in case they had a massive need to buy hardware. But schools generally don't do it at the same rate. So a school might look at the total value of all the assets and say, okay, like, we own $100,000 worth of stuff, so every year we're going to put like $2,000 aside, whereas a for-profit company might put like $10,000 aside.
Okay.
The other thing is a for-profit company is going to look at the leased equipment as an asset, meaning even though they haven't purchased it, they're going to be on the side of, we might have to replace it. So we do need to pretend that it could be coming. And they're going to buffer against that, whereas schools are likely not to, because they didn't purchase it. They aren't audited against it. If your school's not paying taxes, like, there's just no reason to do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So you get in a situation where the school might need a massive amount of cash in order to make a better decision for itself to save money in the long run. So I just started thinking that if schools get into like a leasing scenario, they need to look at the equipment as equipment that they own and come up with like a replacement schedule, even if it's just a simulation, to see how much money they would need to actually take their equipment back, meaning buy new equipment and install it over a reasonable amount of time. So like, there's some equipment you would replace at the 5-year mark, 7-year mark, maybe 10-year mark, if you owned it, and you still need to look at your infrastructure like that and make sure that there is some part of your financial plan that includes it. So when you want to make a move to another provider, you actually have set aside cash, and you can use that money for all kinds of different things. Like, you can pay a little more upfront, just like with a car, to start the lease, to lower your monthly. And you could use that money potentially to bring in extra people, like extra contractors, to help reduce your downtime. There's a lot you can do. But if you get caught without a budget at all, without any money, then you're kind of just at the mercy of the provider or the new provider. You don't have a lot of leverage.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what I've been looking at and noticing and just researching online is I just find, you know, school environments are very trusting, but most of these providers aren't, schools aren't necessarily their main customers. And so they're kind of used to maybe working for businesses or working with businesses where those businesses are a little less trusting and a little more aggressive. And so if you don't have that same posture, they may take advantage of it, or maybe not take advantage of it. They're not going to say, you need to do this. They're not going to bring it up. They're just going to assume that you know.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to interject a couple points here. One thing I've learned about leasing or service contracts, and this is from our business office, our CFO, he wants to go through the terms of service. He wants to see specifically about the buyout, like you mentioned. That's really important. Also about the if we are really unhappy with service, can we cancel it?
Right.
Can we cancel it? And what are the terms of that? Do we have to give them like a month notice, a 3 month notice? It's
And that's something that we should maybe add to this is an SLA, service level agreement. You need to have a service level agreement. And I was speaking with a family member of mine who does tech support for a large company. And the tech support is outsourced. So the company outsources to this other company. And their service level agreement is crazy. Like, if they don't provide service in a certain amount of time for certain issues, they actually have to refund the customer monthly.
Holy smokes.
So they have these metrics, right, for meeting this service standard. And I'm not saying you need to be that aggressive, but, like, you should have something. Mm-hmm. Like, here's something I was thinking about. Like, what if the person, like, you've got a good relationship with the company, they're providing your service, but you're in a situation like we are now where there's just a general shortage in the workforce.
Yep.
You should have something in your service level agreement that says, if you're not able to provide service in a reasonable amount of time, then we have the option to bring in a contractor until your staffing is fixed. So you have the option to bring in like an engineer. They can be approved. But the reason you need to put that in the agreement is because the people who are providing your service, they have to turn over the keys, the access.
Yep.
And they don't want to do that. But if you put that in your SLA and they agree to it, it's like, well, you're understaffed. We get it. We're going to pay for this. You're not. But we need the option to do this. We need that option. And it doesn't end our contract. We're really just bringing in a short time person to help with the work we need. But you're agreeing to give them access without any pushback. Like, if you need them to come in and sign some kind of contract, that's fine. But you're giving them access. So I think that's something I think is would be pretty handy to have. So again, it's not really about money, right, Patrick? Yeah. It's more about like thinking about your organization and making sure you've got some redundancy, some level of defense built in case your provider has a problem that shortchanges you.
And
because I can tell you, like, nobody cares. Like, it's like what do they say in Moneyball? It doesn't matter how many games you win. If you lose the last game of the season, nobody cares.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
It's like that. I mean, it doesn't matter if you've been running your operations, like your IT for like 3 years and it's been great. And once you have a bad month, everyone's like,
yeah,
man, what's Tony doing? Can he do this job anymore? They don't get it. It might even be your fault. It could literally just be your provider's fault.
What have you done for me today? That's
today.
Today.
Not even lately. What have you done for me today?
Today. Yeah. Yeah. Very much so. And another thing to remember, people, is that, so I, we were going to be leasing something, and eventually buy it. This was our plan. I'm not going to say the hardware or anything like that, but I was going over the terms of service with our CFO, and he started crossing things out on the contract. And this was like a really big company. And I was like, my gosh, can you do that? And he's like, yeah. He goes, what? He goes, you watch. He crossed things out and he initialed and dated. He goes, you watch. They'll accept it. These are very reasonable requests. I'm not, you know. And sure enough, we sent them back the terms of service with our notes, and they revised it and sent us an updated contract. Like, you can negotiate, even though it looks like really ironclad, you can negotiate these things a little bit. So don't be afraid just to be like, you know, I don't like the fact that we have to give you 90 days before we terminate.
And
I want that to be a month, and you can totally do that and negotiate with that.
And when you get points. The like list, so like when you get any of these agreements, and I've had a few in the past, like I always try to outsource like whenever I can afford it. When you get these agreements, there'll be things on there. Like, for example, maybe they'll put like a model number of some kind of like printer or copier. Well, you need to look that up and see actually, like, okay, they're saying a Canon image runner, whatever. You need to look up and see what's in the image runner series.
Yeah.
And yep. See if they're overselling you. Make sure that you're getting just what you need and not anything more. Think about it like leasing a car that you used to go to work. You don't need a Bentley to go to work.
Nope.
Okay. So you want to lease like a Toyota Corolla, which is like not going to break down, super reliable, really good resale value.
Maybe a Camry. Maybe a Camry.
It's got everything. Okay, a Camry.
A Camry. It's a little more.
They will, you know, a salesperson will put the Bentley on there, and you're never going to use the features. So this is kind of anecdotal, and I don't think a lot of people will know this reference who listen to IT Babble, but if by chance they were one of the three people that were in this meeting, they'll never forget it. Okay, so it was an argument with a printer supplier. It was a while ago, and they was arguing about the model of the printer, and I'm like, we don't need this. You know, we need this printer, and we need to make sure all the printers support Air, like the Apple AirPrint protocol.
Yeah,
and this guy looked at me and said, yes, but this printer I'm putting here on this contract, they use it in the Pentagon. That's what he told me.
What am I talking about?
That's what that is, you know?
And I was like, all of the teachers have Apple laptops. Like, it's great they use it in the Pentagon. They probably wouldn't want the one I want. And he's like, but this printer's secure. I'm like, they're printing, like, worksheets.
Yeah, yeah. Printing off birth certificates and copies of their social security card or passport or anything like that.
Yeah. And so you've got to check all of that stuff. Again, you can amend that. You don't even really need a big conversation. You're right. You just cross it out, write the model you want, send it back and say, please requote this with this model.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they have a problem with it, like they can't support it or they know there's no parts for it or whatever, they'll tell you. They'll be like, look, we didn't put that in there because you know what? We've got some people with it and we can't keep them running. They're bad.
Yeah. And another thing to check is make sure you're getting an up-to-date model kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You don't want a model that's 7 years old that they're getting ready to update in like a few months.
Patrick and I, working in the Middle East, have seen some pretty shady stuff. Like equipment will show up as new, and it's like they haven't made this for 3 years, and it's like in a box, and it was like somebody emptied it out of a warehouse and sold it to the school. I don't think that's as common like in America, but you always want to check and make sure that it's a like an actual in service piece of equipment that still has parts and is still available.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
So that's it. I'm done.
It was not boring at all.
It's been on my mind.
They're very interesting. Yeah, because this is you know, there's the IT and the technical element, but there is a whole business side to it, and I really lean on our business office for navigating us through that the business side of it. It's like the contract look good. Is the SLA look good? Is, you know, help me? What does this language mean? So it's okay to ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions.
Right, and if you're not confident, aside from having a professional with you before you go into the meeting, you got to watch The Big Short, Jerry Maguire, and just get fired up.
Boom.
Like, get that. You just become the agent. Just go in there, hold it for like 45 minutes, and you can go back to life. But you got to just start quoting stuff from those movies and just take control.
I'm going to get one.
And really never do that. That was just a joke. That's not real advice.
But I am going to give one piece of advice. A lot of these vendors might want to take you out for lunch or give you like some swag and stuff. That's them doing it. You owe them nothing. You owe they took me to lunch. That doesn't mean you have to sign a $1,000 contract for the next 5 years with them. They bought you a hamburger. That's thank you. Say thank you and just move on. You know, if it's not a good fit for your school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's true.
Don't get suckered in and like, wow, they're so nice and I hate to tell them no. Don't Don't worry about that.
And flip it around. If you buy them lunch, they're not going to give you a discount.
That's a great way of putting it. That's because that's very true. That's very, very true. So okay, all right, that's good. So Tony, I got all jazzed up last week. I got all jazzed up.
Okay, I haven't looked at it.
Oh, you haven't?
Before. No, I'm going to look at it right now as you're talking.
Okay. I'm finding. Oh boy.
Hold on. I've got it.
I'm trying to bring it up.
Whoa.
So this is a brand new Microsoft Surface device. It's called the Microsoft Surface SE. They don't say what the SE is for, but it's student edition because only schools can buy it. They're only selling it to school. You can't go to Best Buy and pick this up. You can't order it from Amazon. Your school has to have a Microsoft account, and you have to order it through Microsoft. This is their Chromebook competitor right here. It is here. I'm putting a link in the show notes so people can check it out. That's not working. That was stupid. I'm screwing things up here. Here we go.
It's okay. I'm looking at it now. You know, I was just having a conversation with someone in our elementary school about what the next thing was going to be like in the Windows environment.
Yep. So it runs a special version of Windows 11, and it's cloud-based. So it probably, just like a Chromebook, it probably can boot up, but you have to sign in. You have to have an Office 365,
account. Starts at $249.
$249 which is a great price for a Chromebook. 64 gigabytes of storage, which is typically more, at that price point, it's hard to find that on a Chromebook. You usually get 32 or 16. And this thing looks sweet. It's very repairable, normal screws. You can replace the keyboard, the trackpad, the screen, the battery, the logic board. All of that is replaceable. This is basically a Chromebook that runs Microsoft Windows 11, a special edition 11, and probably, Microsoft Office. Office 365. Yeah. And it's not a touch screen, unlike all the other Surface devices. It's not a touch screen. That probably keeps the price a lot lower.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited about it, but I've got questions though, Tony. I've got some questions and I'm hoping maybe
Number one is, does it run Chrome?
No. It does not. So there is no
App but it runs store. Edge, right?
It has Edge. There's no App Store, no Microsoft Store, and you can't, like a Chromebook, you can't just download anything from the internet and put it on there. It has to be, I think, an extension. I think it relies very heavily on web apps, and I think the only installed app is Edge, and I think Microsoft Office.
I bet it runs. I bet you can send apps to it through Intune.
Yes. Yes, they mentioned you can do that. Yes.
Okay, so this is what's going on. I read this a while ago, and it didn't make any sense to me. It was like over a year ago. It was like May 2020. Edge is now Chrome.
Yeah.
So Edge rebuilt itself with Chromium.
Yep.
And
in fact, all the Chrome extensions that you have on your Chrome, those technically can be installed on Edge and run supposedly just as well.
Yeah, so I'm a Linux user and I run Chromium and Chrome. I rarely see any issues. Occasionally I have an issue with Chromium and some video stuff, but that also could just be my Linux core. It's hard to separate the issues out sometimes. But for years, I just used Chromium, and I never really had any issues. And I sign into it with my Google account and everything. So, yeah, I literally just messaged our Microsoft reseller to see if they have one, because I want to try one out.
Yeah, they look my school is a Google school, so this device doesn't make any sense for us. There's no way in the world we would buy this device. But I'm excited because one of the big things between choosing Microsoft and Google at a school level is Google is free and there's Chromebooks.
Right.
You have this free online service, and you have this hardware that is that marries itself really well with the online service. Like it works just
but
really
you,
well.
You own the Chromebooks.
You own the Chromebooks. That's right. That's
you
right.
You do. Your school does.
That's right.
So we have a bunch of students who BYOD, and I was like, I would like to find maybe another platform that the younger kids could use that is like it has a little bit more management without us having to buy the hardware license and comes in at a low price point. So before I didn't really care, and I've got a decent deal worked out right now with Dell for some equipment.
Yep.
But man, the price of Chromebooks is not low anymore. So now what's happening is people are asking.
No, they are. You just gotta. It depends on how much you want to compromise. Like, we have pretty entry level Chromebooks at $250. That's what they're selling at.
Yeah, yeah, but I think when my school started their program, and it was before I got there, people were able to buy Chromebooks for like $150.
Oh, yeah, yeah, possibly.
And I haven't seen that in a while. And what I'm saying is once the price went up, now, you know, people ask. They're like, at this price point, what else is out there?
Yep.
And I really didn't know. And I was kind of looking around. I'm like, well, you know, Apple came down, but we don't use Apple until, you know, the kids are a little older. And coming from my like previous campus where the kids started with Apple from like grade three, it is a big change for me, but I personally don't care. It's just that I've just noticed within the families there's questions now. Like if, you know, I've had, because last year the prices were heavily inflated for a while.
Yes.
And parents were like, $350, $400 for a Chromebook, or I can spend $500 at Best Buy for Windows. Like, I don't really, and they'll be like, I understand, you know, that you can manage a Chromebook and all, but come on, like, I'd rather buy a Windows computer at that price point. And I can't really knock the argument.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. So it's so great to see something like this at this price point.
It is great, Patrick, but how many times have we seen Microsoft come in like this and then all of a sudden it's just dead? Like, it's just dead by like February.
I think this is a little different. So here, I'm sorry, I'm battling a cold here, people. Battling a cold. So, this is probably a very real scenario. A school district is deciding between Microsoft and Google. I mean, Google's free. It's great. They have Chromebooks, but everybody in the central office is on Windows, and everybody in the central office uses Microsoft Office, and they don't want to change, and they don't want two different Office programs because that causes problems, small problems, but they add up. So they tell all the schools, they're like, guess what? We're going Microsoft. We're not doing Google. This right here is good. This is their answer. This is their Chromebook answer. They can be repaired. They're affordable. My question is, once you deprovision them, how can people use them in the real world? Because there's no, you know, there's no store. Like when you deprovision a Chromebook, that just becomes a regular Chromebook. Like all the restrictions schools have set up for it are now gone. It's just reset to factory, like a Chromebook you would buy at your local electronics store.
Right.
But this, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to look into it. Like, I'm mostly interested to see if it comes with built-in, like if it comes with a built-in system like Go Guardian, so you don't have to get an extra piece of tech.
Yep.
How it works with things like Cisco Umbrella, which does have, like, you know, it does have a plugin that can be loaded onto most Windows 10 and 11 machines for like DNS filtering. So yeah, I'm gonna look into it. So if I can get one, I'll get one. I'll enroll it into Intune in our Office 365, and then I can play around with it and see what we can do. But I like the concept, and you know, I think Apple is kind of right when it comes to laptops. I think touchscreen unless you're going to have a high-end machine, like a high-end, like Lenovo Carbon or something, like one of those X whatever models. I think touchscreen on tablets is great, but I have noticed that we have fewer repairs if the Chromebook the students have is a non-touchscreen, or it's larger where they don't really have an incentive to touch the screen.
Yeah. At my children's school, they have a Chromebooks, and they're touchscreen Chromebooks. And we have the same Chromebook at our school, but it's not touchscreen. And the experience of the touchscreen is not very good. It's not very accurate. It's not very speedy. It's just, you know, why
do it?
Yeah.
So,
anyway, I was super excited. Yeah, I can't. I hope you get your hands on one, try it out. I just like when there's competition out there in the space.
It's always good.
It's always good. Schools benefit from that. That's. We'll see if Apple tries to jump on this bandwagon. I think
Apple's already knocked their price down like $200-$300 what it was before. I think they're done.
They just need a cloud based operating system like Chrome OS or this Windows 11 SE.
I'll tell you what Apple needs to do. I've been thinking about this.
All right.
Apple needs to make. Okay, so you've got iCloud, right?
Yep.
iCloud is like, I hate it. And people who turn iCloud on their personal, like when we, you know, teacher anywhere on the planet that I've worked with a teacher where they've engaged their iCloud on their school device, but they didn't pay for the upgrade because almost no one does. They all get into the same situation where they fill up their iCloud and it is really difficult to move the data off and get it back to the computer.
Yeah.
Like it's annoying
and
it's tricky. And this isn't an insult.
Yeah. Cause if you move it out of the photos, if you like delete it out of the iCloud photos, like your photos, it deletes that picture from your phone.
The first time you open text edit, it's like text edit. It's like, where do you want to save it? Yeah. In iCloud or on your desktop? What do you mean? It's like no one understands that. They do it on purpose. But my point is, if iCloud could be, if you took the iCloud parental controls part and you made that part of Apple School Manager, where when you enroll a device, you can centrally manage the parental controls in a similar way that you do when you own the laptop. So I know that you can push these profiles down, but I mean, like, if you're using the parental controls the way that they're set up on a computer you own versus the controls through the profile, it's not the same. That's why there are so many companies that have these device management platforms where you pay a license and you enroll your Apple devices, because your Apple configurator stuff out of the box just doesn't take it. It just can't handle it. But if you aren't using any of that and you're just like, you make a parent account and you make a student account, that parent account is like rock solid, and you basically can set the laptop up so it's basically like a Chromebook, and you can have a lockout code and all this other stuff. If Apple would make that like a central part of the platform and you could use that, I think they don't need a new laptop. I think their issue is the way the software is managed. I think you can take an Apple laptop right now and lock it down to like one browser and very few services. But at the same time, when a kid has a problem, you can't be going over to touch the laptop every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and the answer right now is, you know, license Jamf, license like whatever. And it's like, well, how about you just put that, build that into the school manager somehow?
Yeah.
Like, if you purchase a device and it gets enrolled automatically, from that point, you should be able to turn on parental controls and deploy some kind of like blueprint, same thing that a parent would be able to do. So that, I think that could do it right there. I mean, it would make me really happy. Imagine if you could say, okay, we do use Apple in middle school, but we control the profile remotely, and this is what it looks like. And you've locked it at the application level, which is what you can do if you're a parent.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you. But I don't think.
But they won't.
They won't do it. I don't think they'll.
No, because their goal is to create a laptop that has like a wheel on it and no keyboard. Spin it around. Push buttons.
That's what
they want. Talk to Siri. Siri, Okay, why can't they integrate Siri, Patrick, so we can just be like, Siri, find laptop 502.
Because it's terrible.
Engage only Chrome. Everything else shut down. Why can't we do that with Siri?
Because Siri's so stupid.
It'd be amazing.
So is Google Assistant. They're all terrible. They're
just Siri, terrible. Find Patrick's laptop.
No, we won't be able to do it.
And Siri would be like, Patrick's laptop was previously connected to access point 135 on the second floor. Like, why can't Siri do that?
Because Siri's an idiot. Siri's stupid. Just like all of them. They're all so stupid. Read my look at my soul machines.
You know what?
I didn't even know where Washington D.C. was. You couldn't tell me where the White House was.
I'm just going to turn on Cortana right now.
Don't do that, jeez, man.
And it'll crash everything. My whole system will shut down.
It could. Okay, Tony, we are ready for the
Ask IT Babble.
All right, we have two questions. You've got them in the show notes here.
I do.
The first question, I'm a little fuzzy on that one.
I can take it. I think it was like, it sounds like definitely someone from like maybe a British school because they're using the word kit. So I take the first one. You take the second one because the second one you talked to me about before.
Yes.
So the first question is, we have students who bring, I think they mean inappropriate equipment.
I think so. School. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just copied this straight from our spreadsheet. So that's.
Yeah. They basically are saying the kids are bringing inappropriate equipment. The school is very clear that the kids don't care. They're still bringing inappropriate equipment. What can they do? I guess they can't afford to buy the equipment for the kids. Okay. So there's a lot of different things you could do. So first off, I recommend registering devices and. Even if you don't have a lot of technology in place to regulate stuff, it's a good practice. So the first, and if you haven't done it ever, you have to do it once, and it's horrible. Okay, the first time will take you, if you've got 600 kids, the first time will take you about 6 or 7 school days, unless you're like in a boarding school. You just do it slowly. You meet with every student by grade level or advisory. You look at their laptop. You put a sticker on it so everybody knows this is a registered laptop. You can give them like a barcode or something, whatever, just give them a sticker. The point really is to let the student know, this is the laptop you have to use. We're putting a sticker on it. Parents and everybody know that that is the laptop you bring, only the one with the sticker. Mm-hmm. Use good stickers so they can't be removed easily. Okay. Yep. You can buy those. They're cheap. Buy better stickers. I recommend always getting the MAC address of the machine, because if you do end up with some tech where you can control what gets on your network, you easily can do that with pretty affordably with the MAC address.
Yep.
There's a lot of new tech out there where people are like, you put an application on it, it registers, but a lot of schools can't afford that. But at least MAC address will show up on almost everything. So get that. And then make sure you have a policy. Besides like just the proper equipment, like make sure your policy is like what type of devices you can bring and how many. So maybe it's like you can bring any 3 devices and put them on our Wi-Fi. Great. So that means you can bring a laptop, an iPad and a phone, or a laptop, a phone, an Apple Watch, like whatever. And set your network up so that each user can only get 3 concurrent IP addresses. There's a lot of ways to attack it. But even if you can't do any of that, just having the policy so parents know. Mm-hmm. Like, parents might help if they have a little more clarity. Like, what happens is the kids, you know, it's busy in the morning, kids go to school, they don't want to grab their Apple because they can't play video games on it, their video games are on the Windows computer, they grab their Windows computer, their parents don't pay attention, or they bring both of them to school. If their parents know, like, the only computer they can bring to school is the one with the sticker on it, that's a really easy thing for a parent to manage in a busy situation.
Yeah.
So that's my recommendation. And that touch base where you're meeting with the kids and making it formal, that does a lot more than you realize.
Yeah.
The kids aren't really sure what you can do. Yeah. They just know that you've sat down with them, you have their MAC address, you put a sticker on their laptop. So now they're like, maybe they do know what I'm bringing to school. And that takes care. That usually takes care of like 70-80% of your problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay.
That's good. And another thing is, if you think a kid is just ignoring it and bringing whatever they want, the school has the right just to take the device, get that MAC address from it, and block it from the network.
Mm-hmm.
And so it won't. It just That's won't right. work. It. I mean, it'll work. It, but it won't. You will
it
have
won't
no
work on your network.
It'll have no Wi-Fi, and you don't need any network. Will has that capability. So.
That's right.
That's good. That's good. That's good. I like that. The next question is, what is the best way to manage parents picking up children? I have been suggesting software. Thanks. School Pass. I don't know if they work outside of the United States or not, but schoolpass.com, that's their bread and butter. That's what they do. They're at schools where kids are getting picked up or on buses. You can get pretty sophisticated where there are cameras at the entrances, and those cameras are like scanning license plates. And when it sees that license plate and it associates it with that parent, it'll also associate it with those students. And what teachers have at the end of the day is they turn on their projector, they open up School Pass, and they have their class. And when their parents when their parents' license plate is scanned, it lets them know, hey, your parent, you know, so and so's parents are 3 to 5 minutes away. Get your stuff and go outside. That way you have it works really well. We use School Pass for other things, and we haven't implemented this part of it yet, but I think in the springtime we're going to try to implement it. We don't have the cameras, but what we're going to do is we're going to position people outside who are just going to, because all our parents have like their names on their car. So, mm-hmm. so, and they're just going to kind of type it in. They'll be like, oh, this, you know, John Smith is here Mr. El Sabah just
you should issue every parent a vanity plate.
We when you work could in independent schools, sometimes that as hilarious as it sounds is probably an option. But anyway, schoolpass.com, that's what they do. It works really well. It doesn't matter if you have buses or walkers or people. It does a great job. It also can tie in with most school information systems, so it can actually work with your attendance. So if kids come in late, it'll sync with that system, and teachers don't have to go in and mark them late or whatever. Once they check in, it's all good to go. So check it out, schoolpass.com. So, yeah, there you go.
All right, well, I think that's all we have.
That's it, yeah. So for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And you can find us at www.itbabble.com, and we will catch you next week on the podcast. Keep on babbling out there.